First, over the last several months, a lot of organizations and businesses have released statements of solidarity around the Black Lives Matter movement and racial justice protests in connection with the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and others by police officers. The statements came from all kinds of organizations, including academic institutions and scientific societies. Our next guests want to know, what are those groups planning to do to follow up on those statements? Fernando Tormos Aponte is an assistant professor of public policy and political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He wrote a recent piece in Scientific American titled, On Racial Justice, Statements Are Not Enough. Fernando, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Erica Marin Spiota is professor of geography at UW-Madison. Erica is on the Leadership Council of the Earth Science Women's Network and lead principal investigator for Advanced Geo. Erica, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Fernando, let's start with you and this piece. You wrote that academic institutions need to address how they, quote, perpetuate systems of racial oppression, end quote. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
Definitely. Look, for us who are affiliated to some kind of scientific organization, society, or institution, when we got statements of this nature, we were left wondering, what does this mean? Will they actually do something beyond just saying something? And will they address the kinds of problems that they have within their own institutions? So we know that these institutions are often very hostile places for scholars of color, and particularly Black scholars and Black women scholars, Black non-gender binary scholars. So these institutions are now saying that they're recognizing systemic oppression in the United States through some of these statements. And a lot of folks are wondering, well, how are you going to address the systemic oppression that is found within your own institution?
Erica, you're a co-signer of a Change.org petition that was titled Call for a Robust Anti-Racism Plan for the Geosciences. Do you have a sense of, I don't know, skepticism, I guess, when you see a statement coming out from a research group or a university about whether they would take action to follow up on the statements?
Yeah, I think similarly to what Fernando mentioned, a lot of our societies in the geosciences put out statements, and some of them were stronger than others. And so, you know, the community responded with petitions, with demands for specific actions to follow up on those statements of solidarity.
And Fernando, what kind of specific actions are you hoping to see from, you know, academic institutions and the groups that bring together people within a similar field?
There's a range of actions that scientific institutions and organizations can take, one of which is not to take any sort of negative actions and have any kind of repercussion over those who choose to mobilize. So we know that sometimes scholars who become active in social justice struggles are subject to some kind of disciplinary measure. So instead of repressing mobilization, a lot of scholars are calling on their scientific societies, institutions, and organizations to embrace mobilization. And it matters, right? We know that, for instance, students don't vote that much, particularly STEM students. They can help get students registered to vote. They can support the social justice work and civic engagement work of scholars by changing their tenure and promotion guidelines, by allocating funds for this kind of work, by recognizing the value of this work, by recognizing fields that are dedicated to the study of Black political and social life, like Black studies or American studies, African-American studies, Africana studies. There are a range of options that they can choose to take. And one of the things that that a lot of scholars have said is that inaction is a form of action in itself, right? Inaction is a policy. And insofar as these institutions don't do something, they are choosing to abide by the status quo, which we now know, and we have known for a while, that it is unjust. It is unequal.
Erica, I know there's a concern in many fields, particularly in the sciences, I think, about a lack of diversity. And that that petition I mentioned on geosciences said that field had a particular problem. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So the petition you mentioned, and I also want to mention, there's actually two main petitions for the geosciences. And one of the reasons the geosciences is kind of is involved is because it's one of the least diverse fields of STEM, especially when we're looking at kind of the representation of racial and ethnic groups. So it's majority white and majority white male dominated organization. And there's been a lot of efforts in the geosciences in the last years to increase diversity. And a lot of those actions have focused more on gender diversity. And so we've actually seen an increase in the representation of women, for example, but it's mostly been white women. And so now there's really a lot more recognition and efforts that, you know, that the representation of, you know, for example, Black students, Black scholars in the geosciences has not actually changed in the last 40 years. So there's a lot more work that needs to be done.
We're talking to Erica Marin-Spiota, professor of geography at UW-Madison, and Fernando Tormos-Aponte from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, political scientist there. We're talking about their calls for colleges, universities, and organizations, scientific and research organizations, to follow up statements they've made about racial justice and equality with some concrete action. Erica, can you talk some about the obstacles that are out there in the path of people, I guess primarily people of color, as they try to break into fields that are historically almost overwhelmingly white?
Yeah, so there's a long list of obstacles, and there's actually a lot of research kind of documenting, you know, inherent bias in our processes of admissions, recruitment, retention from the undergraduate level up to the faculty level. And as Fernando mentioned earlier, there's also, you know, it's not just kind of implicit bias, which a lot of people have focused on, but there's actually, you know, often exclusionary behaviors that lead to, you know, lived experiences of hostile climates in the geosciences. And some of the challenges in the geosciences specifically is, you know, as a very male-dominated kind of discipline, it has a specific culture that's not always welcoming to, you know, people of different gender identities and people who don't conform to kind of the rugged stereotype of, you know, the geologist who's out, you know, rugged geologist in the field who loves to camp and, you know, loves to dig up rocks. And so there's actually been a lot of efforts that is reflected in recent conversations in social media about, you know, the experiences of Christian Cooper, right, in Central Park in New York State, just about the safety of being a person of color, you know, being a person of a gender minority in the field, in field environments. So those are some of the challenges specific to the geosciences. But, you know, a lot of these kind of, you know, just bias in the systems and the processes, you know, are shared by, you know, not just STEM disciplines, but outside of STEM as well.
Fernando, I've heard the argument in conversations like these over the many years they've been going on now, the idea that, you know, a scientific field or research field is essentially meritocratic. If you do good work, you're going to rise to the top. What would you say to that that statement?
Well, ironically, there is research now that shows that a lot of the creativity and innovation comes from a diverse group of folks within academia, but it is less likely to be recognized as such as creativity and innovation when it comes from underrepresented scholars. So this meritocracy does not allocate value to the work of everyone equally. There are those who are more likely to be recognized for their innovations, for their research than others, right? So, there are a lot of folks who I argue, who does this meritocracy work for?
And Erica, you have been doing work, including work with the group Advanced Geo. I think that's focusing on women in particular. Can you talk about maybe some concrete success stories you've seen out there?
Yeah, so Advanced Geo is funded by the National Science Foundation to improve workplace climate. And we started working on sexual harassment in the geosciences, which is also a huge problem that has gain a lot of public attention in the last couple of years, and recognize really quickly that sexual harassment does not happen in a vacuum. And we have to really think about harassment more broadly and how it affects different identities and thinking about hostile behavior. So that's kind of what we've been focusing on and working with some of the main geoscience societies. And I think one of the successes that I've seen in the geoscience is, you know, recently a lot of societies, the American Geophysical Union was the first to revise their code of conduct to include harassment, discrimination, and bullying under the definition of research misconduct. And so one of the recent petitions that change.org that was led by Hendrat Ali, who's a professor at Fort Hays State University, actually calls for these codes of ethics to, you know, even broaden even more and incorporate not just, you know, discrimination, but actually specific language about anti-racism.
We're talking about academic institutions and scientific and other research societies and what they could do to turn the tide against racism in society at large and within their own ranks. Our guests are Fernando Tormaz-Aponte from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and Erica Marin-Spiota of UW-Madison. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this part of your life? Do you have experience in an academic or research setting, maybe as a person of color yourself, having encountered some of our guests are talking about? Do you have ideas for solutions or questions for our guests about what they've encountered, what they're working on, what their hopes are? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Professors Erica Marin-Spiota and Fernando Tormaz-Aponte. They say that colleges, universities, and scientific organizations need to do more to take action on issues of racism. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in a STEM field yourself? Do you have some of these same concerns maybe at your workplace or in your profession? If you work in an academic setting, what is going on your campus to try to tackle some of these issues? Do you feel like there's a more of an urgent focus on this right now? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Erica, can you speak to some of what you see going on here in Wisconsin with efforts to either fresh efforts over the last couple of months or over the years to tackle some of these problems?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, there's, I think, been a lot of efforts over the years, but more recently, a lot more commitment, which has been exciting to see. The Division of Diversity, Equity, and Educational Achievement, now run by Cheryl Gittins on campus, has, you know, over the summer held several listening sessions with community leaders, both on campus and off campus. And so trying to build partnerships across the community, I think, has been really powerful way to kind of bring attention to, you know, racism that students are experiencing on campus as well as off campus. And our chancellor, Rebecca Blank, sent an email out to campus last week outlining some new initiatives. And some of those include, you know, more research funding to support research into race in the United States, as well as, thinking about including commitments to community engaged scholarship and scholarly activities to increase diversity, equity, inclusion as considerations for tenure.
Fernando, would you be willing to share some of your own experience coming up as a researcher in the U.S., some of what you saw and lived through that made you want to pursue not just research and teaching, but also racial justice within your field?
Yes, definitely. I mean, in political science, you have the field of race and ethnicity and politics. And for a long time, this field has had to struggle to really make a claim for its legitimacy within the broader field of political science. Some folks call the research that people do on race, ethnicity, and politics me-search, even though when white scholars study white problems, they're not told that they study me-search, right? So a lot of folks have a lot of challenge building a career on the study of these issues, despite the fact that these are issues that are important in our current times, right? We are witnessing perhaps one of the largest movements in our history unfold during this time in the middle of a pandemic. People are willing to take risks over protesting for others. And guess what? The people who are poised to study this, to do the research on this, to insert some insight into our news cycle about this, have been systematically marginalized in their field.
Erica, I want to get to your thought on one thing I've seen in the scientific community, a concern that when people from, say, the United States are doing international research, say, in Africa or South America in particular, and not building research partnerships and treating, you know, the local people they're working with there as equal partners, And then something comes along, like, say, a global pandemic, and they can't keep traveling there. They're losing that research. We're actually losing science because we're not bringing in this case, geographically diverse group of researchers. Is that something you've seen in the fields you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's actually a term for that called helicopter research. You know, and for example, I actually do a lot of my research outside of the mainland United States. And so there's definitely been a big push, especially more recently, for, you know, building local collaborations, you know, and not just coming in, you know, from the United States as an expert or believing you're an expert without recognizing that there's often, you know, a lot of long history of kind of knowledge building and understanding of the ecosystems or the processes that we're studying. And so, you know, that's definitely part of the big conversations in the sciences is, you know, how do we not do this colonial type research?
We're talking to Erica Marin-Spayota, professor of geography at UW-Madison, and Fernando Tormoz-Aponte, assistant professor of public policy and political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. They've both joined calls for academic institutions, the colleges and universities, and also research organizations, professional groups of scientists and other researchers to tackle issues of racism, not just with statements, but with more actions. Fernando, I've seen the concern sometimes that, you know, at a business or a university or whatever, concerns are raised, a diversity officer is appointed, and that's the end of the story. And it's just kind of like a token solution to the problem. Do you worry that that's going to come out of, you know, what's going on in 2020?
Definitely. You know, oftentimes diversity officers are not given the resources that they need to address the problems that they are tasked with addressing. And oftentimes when they are unable to address these problems, they're fired. Right. And this is part of the problem. This is why these problems are not addressed. It's oftentimes what we see is that when issues like these arise, there's a committee or a council or some consulting firm retained to address this problem, but little is actually done. So a lot of folks are really looking at some of these statements and saying, oh, no, not another committee that I'm going to have to serve on and actually take the burden for addressing the problems that you created. So folks are saying instead of just bringing people and trying to do all this consulting and create some new committee and new councils of that nature, how about we change hiring practices, retention practices, to perhaps fund community-oriented research and engagement, to invest in research that actually manages to improve Black lives, to perhaps close the racial wage gap between Black and other races of scholars. So all of these are tangible things that can be done that go beyond just allocating all responsibility for addressing these major systemic issues on one diversity officer.
Erica, I've seen some concerns that even if the perfect solutions are found at the university level, the professional organization level, there's still worries about what's happening, you know, in pre-kindergarten, in elementary schools, things that places where maybe those kids of color, the girls, maybe even low-income people are steered away from going into these scientific and research fields. Do you see that being part of the solution?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to really start much earlier when we start thinking about the problems of representation and participation in STEM more broadly, and just thinking about, you know, kind of race, not just sexism, but also racism that is, you know, experienced by children of color at very early stages, right? And there's, you know, data of that happening in Wisconsin with huge gaps in how students of different races are treated. So there's a lot of work to be done across all levels of education, but also not just within education, but our general society. And I'm a little bit more optimistic maybe that I think, you know, rather than just forming one committee, I think we're at a different moment right now. And there's so much movement and a lot of this movement being led, you know, by young students, young people out in the streets, that I think people are listening. And I think we're starting to see kind of a recognition that we need to address these problems at multiple levels, right? And across all facets of society. So I'm hopeful that we'll start seeing some changes coming forward.
Yeah, along those lines, Fernando, there have been calls like this, certainly at least since the 1960s and before that, I'm sure. But Do you feel like this time is different in some ways? Do you see some kind of momentum building here?
I certainly do. I mean, the kind of risks that people are willing to take to go out during a deadly pandemic to protest for Black lives, I don't think we've ever seen something like that. And that certainly says something. The kind of public opinion polls that we're seeing, where a lot of people are actually in agreement with some of the proposals of this movement, some of the demands of this movement, you know, that matters. That drives social change. So I think in the coming months, in the coming years, we're going to witness even more change. But I'll tell you what, change is already happening. Because right at this moment, as we're talking, and for the past month or so, every one of these organizations, scientific organizations, scientific institutions, have had to have their own reckoning with race. They've had to have some kind of internal discussion, as bad as it may be, on what they will say and what they will do. That process in itself has some long-term pedagogical effects. People are now going to be more aware of this, and the way in which they look at this is going to change for a long time.
And very briefly, Erica, just in our last 30 seconds, do you feel that sense of optimism?
I do, and I would say absolutely. We're having conversations in, you know, some of the least diverse corners of science that I've never seen before, and I could not imagine we would be having. And so I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody right in the sciences to say, this isn't a problem. I didn't know this was a problem. So I am optimistic.
Erica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Fernando, thanks for being with us.
It's been a pleasure.
We've been talking to UW-Madison Professor of Geography Erica Marin-Spillota and Fernando Tormos-Aponte, Assistant Professor of Public Policy and Political Science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. We talked to them today about their calls for and ideas for how colleges and scientific organizations can work to tackle issues of racism.